All right, welcome back to Racing News Podcast, episode 97. Kyle is back. Let's welcome him straight away. We're actually doing this on video as well, so it's worth logging on to YouTube and Facebook. Have a look at the shirt Kyle is wearing. We said he'd come back with some merch. Full-blown trail runner. Look at that. Welcome back, mate.
Definitely wouldn't wear this on the trail. I feel like I'm going to be a bit rusty. I think it's been like 6 weeks. This is the longest gap I've gone without recording forever since we started.
One of my questions was, I mean, we've done a few random episodes. We did 1,000 loops with Benny and Scott, and then I uploaded one of Benny's old history of the goat loop. And then, of course, we did the Black Hall preview, which was a lot of fun. But I was going to ask, did you get a chance to listen to any of them while you're away, or is it just block out Australia?
So to sum up whether I got a chance to listen to it, Tom, I think in our 40 hours of travel to and from Europe, I got through 15 minutes of the latest Transformers movie. That was the extent of my listening. And during the trip, not a lot of time. So I think I listened to the first 10 minutes of the episode with Scotty and Ben, and I will get back to it at some point.
Fair enough. Well, we have, before we started recording here, we have discussed taking young children on a plane, because Kyle and Caitlin obviously did that with Elsie, and Teresa and I are doing it next year with Heidi, almost the exact same age. So we've already covered that, the do's and don'ts about traveling with a 12 to 14 month old baby. So we won't cover that here, but we're going to go into Berlin, we're going to go into Chamonix, we're going to go into everything that Kyle did overseas. So that's what we're going to start with. We'll probably get to Blackall, which is a massive event. We'll get to that probably at about the half hour mark, I reckon. So you can skip to that if you want, or stick around while Kyle talks us through everything from Europe. We'll also go through SEQ round 1 and 2, 1,000 loops on the goat. It's been done. Kyle got back a day before it, I think, a day or two before it. And we'll cover summer goats as well. But Kyle, let's go. Berlin. Well, first of all, so you talk us through the early days of the trip as you flew into Germany.
We flew in on the Wednesday. We got about just after lunchtime. And that rest of that day was a little bit of a write-off. I don't think we did a whole lot. We got to the hotel and finally got to just take a deep breath after the travel over there. It's a long way. That's what I said to you before. I think we clocked it. It was about 30 hours from when we left home to when we got to the hotel in Berlin. So that was good. That was Wednesday. And then those first few days was just trying to, we saw a few. We walked to the Brandenburg Gate and saw some of the sights around the city and went to check in on Friday. You could go Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. So jumped on the train, got out to the where we pick up our bibs, and it was massive. Yep. I've been to expos before, but it's in one of the old, I don't know if you've actually seen where it is, Tom. It's like an old airport that doesn't get used as an airport anymore, but it's been like a massive hangar that it would have gone for like, I don't know, 500-600 meters at least. You're just kind of walking through everything, and they had everything you could imagine. So picked up a shirt and a long sleeve running shirt, had to pick up a few things.
Efficient getting the bib like in and out pretty quickly?
Well, luckily enough, I got there quite late, thinking that it won't be that, but well, of course it was going to be busy, because I think it opened at say 10 or 11, and I probably got there at 15 minutes after it, or just before it was about to open. And I got off the train, I was walking up, and I thought, are these people all here for the race? Because I reckon there was about three different lines, and I reckon I was in about position 400 in the line that I was in. I thought, this could take a while. But I had messaged Rinnie and said, are you guys here? She posted a story. She's like, we're right up near the front of the line. Just walk on up. So I was like, I'm just going to quietly walk on up here and just start chatting. And I got straight in. So we were one of the first ones through on that day. So we didn't wait long at all. So it was very efficient. But that was good. That was a cool experience. And that was the Friday. And then, the day before the race, I didn't do a whole lot. I went for a little jog kind of in the afternoon, or kind of mid-morning, I think it was, just from our accommodation down to where like one of the canals are. And there was just this nice little dirt path that I got to go for a run on, which was cool. Did get to do it for a run around the Tier Garden on the Thursday, the day after we got there. It was beautiful. Yep. Really, really nice place nice place to run. So that was cool to kind of do a loop of that. A lot of runners out, obviously. And then, it was kind of getting everything ready for the race. And I was kind of excited, but it felt like we were, again, you'll find this when you're traveling with a young kid, you're kind of preoccupied the whole time doing family things. So it's not like you can't have that much time to concentrate specifically on the race, which was probably a good thing. You can't really overthink anything. And then the only thing I had to kind of contemplate on the Saturday was trying to work out my exact nutrition plan, given that we don't have bottles or anything on the tables. And we're trying to work out where Caitlin could see me. And then we worked out that she could actually kind of go towards the start line and then get back to about the 19-kilometer mark, which was only not too far kind of south of our accommodation. And I thought, yeah, oh, that'd be perfect. I'm going to carry I was wearing a belt and a flask anyway. I thought, I'm going to finish that bottle not long before then. Jeez, it'd be nice if I could pick up a second flask at about 19Ks, because that would get me through pretty close to the finish. So that was the plan then. That was sorted. I said, Caitlin, here's the flask. If we went on Google Maps and found like the exact corner, what shops were there, of like, okay, you're going to stand on this corner. I had no idea where it was. I was like, I'll try and look out for something. I know it's about this far in. And if I see you, I see you. If not, I had a bunch of gels with me in case. So that was my planning on the Saturday, and that ended up working quite nicely. But
when that's the Instagram, video, I think Caitlin.
Yeah, that was the spot. Yeah. That was just not long before halfway. So that all worked out quite nicely.
And did you find the Domino's on the Saturday night? Because this is what you said beforehand. You were going to have Domino's pizza as your pre-race.
I had, but then I think there was one that wasn't on. We had to get Uber Eats with this because it was too far for us to get to walking. And they weren't serving on Uber Eats. So there was some other kind of thing or whatever. So we had pizza from another, I can't remember what, some type of pizza shop, which was delicious. So that all, I was okay with that. All went smoothly. Yeah. Then it was kind of race morning.
Talk us through the race. So later start, 9 o'clock was?
Was kind of nice because you didn't really have to, I kind of got up before my alarm. I didn't really need it anyway. You kind of get up normal time and have some breakfast. And the plan was we're going to kind of meet near the start line. And that was it's a bit of a process to get into the starting area. That was that was the longest walk I've ever had to do to get to the start line. I reckon we probably walked 1.5 to 2 kilometers just to get to the start line from where we kind of were.
Yeah.
And you pretty much walk into the start of the park and it's like, okay, these three waves are going to take this path off into the bush here. And then this wave's taking this path. And then A, B, and C, I think, are going this way. And there's just people everywhere. So then the toilet lines were just insane, as you can imagine. So a lot of people using the bush and trees that were around. That was quite interesting to see. Kind of finally filed into the start area, which was jam-packed by the time. We didn't think we were leaving it too late, but it was just jam-packed, people trying to push in. I think everyone in that pack probably thought that they needed to be at the front. You know, when you get into the start area and everyone assumes that they're the fastest in that group.
Absolutely. So definitely.
Everyone's, I need to get in front. I need to get in front. And I thought we were pretty close. We were maybe like 50 or 60 meters from the start line. So that's about that. That's close enough. Like, I don't really need to get any closer. And then what I kind of realized as we were about to start is we were in like quite a big open space, and the start line, it gets quite narrow as you cross the start line. So I thought, we're going to have to funnel into this start line. I don't know how this is going to go. Like, I just want to kind of stay on my feet. That was probably the bit I was worried about, of barely making it to the start line. And anyway, like, we were only in there for about 10 minutes before we went, and got through the start line. Okay. It kind of was like a quick little shuffle. Everyone kind of power walking towards the start line, and then kind of took off, and then it opens up onto the big road. So you can find some space pretty quickly. And then I would have been only like 400 meters in. I remember looking down at the ground and being like, what is all this orange stuff all over the road? And then we found out later, a bunch of the climate protesters had jumped out and thrown paint all over the road, like 400 meters into the course.
Yeah.
So it's just these orange footprints for the next like kilometer. Just everyone had to run through this paint. So there's still,
paint. I saw some video of that when the German police just jumped on and literally just grabbed and manhandled them off and just tore them off there. So that might have ruined a couple of pairs of brand new super shoes.
I think it did, because there was a lot of orange footprints in that next kilometer, which I thought was quite funny. But
What's that road like down to the victory column? Because that's the famous shot, isn't it? Like, was that pretty?
It was funny.
Did you sort of pinch yourself to think it's happening? This is happening,
right? Yeah, now. And like big crowds, a lot of noise, and it was funny because I was running along and like I think the first you kind of it's always hard to get the pacing right that first kilometer because like you're kind of getting around people and it's quite busy. But I felt like I was like mid-pack. Like there was just all I could see was people in front of me. Like you definitely had no open space. And so Ty, who's from the coast as well, we ended up found each other, were standing right next to each other. And he'd said he was just going to kind of run with me for as long as he could. So we were running together at that point towards the start. And I think we hit maybe the first kilometer was about 3:36, 3:35.
Yeah.
Which given kind of getting through all that traffic, I said to Ty, yep, I'm happy with that. Given that's the 3:34 I've got here, I was looking at it. And then we kind of just like tried to settle into a rhythm. And I was wondering, I'm like, I wonder if there's going to be like a big pack that forms, or is it just going to be people? And it kind of just ended up being just like a stream of people the whole way. Like there was packs, but you were never more than like 2 meters from someone. So it was just kind of like just packs everywhere. Like it wasn't like Gold Coast where it kind of just separated within the first 10 or 15 minutes. It was like you're in the mid-pack of the Gold Coast Half Marathon. Like, there was just people everywhere. Like, there'd be two or three groups wide across the road, and then, like, there was just, it was really good because you could just run wherever you like. And, yeah, it kind of settled in. And I remember through the first, like, three, it was probably the first closer to 10Ks, I just didn't feel great. I didn't feel bad. I just, it was almost, I was like, oh, can we hurry up and just get to 30K? Like, I kind of wanted to get this thing done. It was a bit, I think that's just when you tape it and you've traveled and things, just a bit like flat. The pace felt okay. My legs felt okay, but just, it just wasn't coming smoothly. I remember Gold Coast towards the start, I felt like we were just floating along and it felt like we're just going for a jog. Whereas this, I was like, oh, this is starting to feel like just my legs are a bit tired, just felt a bit off. And then I reckon about 8, 9, 10Ks, I started to come good and thought, oh, okay, I'm feeling pretty good. I think my first 5K split, I was pretty much exactly where I needed to be. And then,
do you know that your tracker didn't actually register your 5K?
I had a few messages afterwards.
We're back here just refreshing all the time, refreshing, and yours hadn't come through. And then you have that moment where you go, well, surely it's the tracker. But then part of your head goes, oh, maybe it's not. And then so a couple of private messages went around, not on the group ones, but just like, do you reckon he's okay? Is he fine? Is he good? And then bang, up came your 10K, and we're just like, okay, it's good. Yeah, you're still moving. Yep, That's good.
That was okay. So I think, because I remember, I think I, like, I've got my, like, Strava, I suppose, where I lapped my watch, which is where the timing lights were. I think I was 17:42. I don't know if this matches up with the actual official splits, but I think 17:45 was the splits that I was kind of wanting to be around. And I went 17:42, and then I was 17:47 for the second five. So I think I was 1 second under what I needed to be at 10K. So I was like, okay, perfect. I'm where we need to be. And at that point, there was kind of a couple of groups around me that I kind of just tucked into the back of this one group. And then there was a group kind of off the back of me, but it was just kind of a continuous big group. And the other thing I'd found out the day before was I saw somewhere on social media, some running influencer had posted a photo with, who was it? Jacob Kiplimo, who won World Cross Country, like one of the fastest runners in the world, saying, oh, looking forward to having my 2:30 pacer tomorrow. And I thought, because when I first saw things pop up that he was pacing Berlin, I thought he was pacing the front group. I thought, oh, that'll be interesting to watch. And then I thought, no, surely he's not pacing two. Like, why would he be pacing 2:30? That's weird. And then at about like 8Ks, he just came running up next to me. And I was like, oh, how cool is this? He'd obviously started a bit further back and was trying to get up onto like gun time for this group. So he ran past fairly quickly. But he looked like he was just out for like just a Sunday jog. I thought, oh, geez, it'd be nice if I was feeling as good as he's feeling right now. Yeah. But he just kind of glided past and off he went. I think, I don't know how far into the race he actually went before he dropped out. But that was a cool little moment to see, like,
awesome.
If not one of the fastest runners in the world. Anyway, that was good. And then the next like 5 or 10Ks kind of felt pretty good. Like, I kind of just felt like I was ticking them off and I'm like, I'm starting to come good here. Like, this is exactly what I want. Like, you're on these big open roads where you just, you don't have to think about anything. You don't have to think about your footing. You just follow the group. Like, they're just, it was just easy to run. You had nothing else to worry about. And I think I got that drink from Caitlin at 19K, which worked perfectly. I'm glad I got that because I didn't really particularly want to go to gels. I was happy with the liquid. And I remember around that point, I actually pushed to get up to the next group because I felt like the group I was on was just dropping off a touch. So jumped up onto the next group. And then I remember at that point going, oh, the guys will be about to start recording the podcast soon. Like, I better get some nice even splits here for them to see.
Yeah.
And I remember coming up to the half marathon point. I could see the little arch coming up and I was looking at my watch and I was like, oh, I reckon I'm going to be pretty close to 1:15. I might be a touch over. And then I crossed the mat and looked at my watch and it was 1:14:59. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly what I need. So they'll be happy with that. They'll think that I'm pacing it well. And then the next few Ks, again, I felt reasonably good. I remember I got to, I think it was about 25, 26, and it started to thin out a little bit. And there was a couple of guys that I was with, and I kind of felt like they were just dropping back a touch. And I thought, I'm feeling really good here. Like, I don't want to drop back if I just want to keep going at this pace. And I kind of moved around them at about, I would have been 26K. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, should I just sit in behind these guys? Or if they're kind of starting to slow, do I need to kind of go? There was a few people up the road. And I kind of just went around them a little bit. And for the next kilometer, I think I was looking at my splits. I went 3:29. So I only took a couple of seconds off. But all of a sudden, I felt like I was like flying. I was like, I feel amazing here. Like the last two times I've done the marathon, by the time I got to like 26, 27, 28, I was starting to feel absolutely terrible. And I thought, oh, today's the day. Like, how good is this? 26K and I'm flying. How good is this? And then the next couple of Ks, I went 3:35, 3:39 without really realizing. I thought, oh, okay. Yeah. Why is my average pace dropping? I feel like I'm running well. And I still felt okay, but I remember it trying to drop to touch. And then I got to 28 and I thought, no, nah, I'm not going to feel crap at 28K again. I need to get back onto the pace. And then
yeah.
I still felt okay. And I was starting to pass people at that point. And then the next 2Ks, I was 330 and then 328 for the 30th K. And I think that 5K split when I lapped it, I was 1744.
Mm-hmm.
No, yes, 1744 for that 5K. I think that was the K. Or am I on the next one? Anyway, I was still not too far off, I think, at 30. Maybe it's on pace. And then 31, 32, I started to go, oh, I'm just starting to feel this exactly like I did at Gold Coast. I'm just starting to hurt a little bit more, same as when we went over the hill. And then I reckon by about 33K, I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to get tough. This is
going to get hurt, really hurt tough. Hurt as in muscular fatigue or
just general fatigue. Like it wasn't, it was more, I was just like, I'm just fatiguing. Like nothing, I wasn't going to cramp. I didn't feel like I was that dehydrated. Like it was starting to get a bit warm as well, but just that general fatigue. I just felt like I don't think I could run too much faster. And then the next few Ks, I kind of just started to slow down a little bit. And I remember I got to like 35 and lapped it. And I think I was 18:32. I was looking at my splits and I was like, I'm pretty sure I was closer to 19 minutes at Gold Coast at that point. So I'm like, I'm still a little bit ahead of Gold Coast, but I went out a bit slower than what I did at Gold Coast. I was like, oh, this could be interesting. And then I started to think, I was like, okay, I think 2:30, I'm not going to go do a massive negative split this last 5, 6, 7K. I'm hurting already. I was like, oh, I wonder if I could still get Tom's North's club record. And I started to do the math in my head and I was like, oh, I'm starting to go backwards here. Like, I don't think that's going to happen either. And then I reckon by about 37, I was like, yep, don't think that's going to happen. And then by about 38, I was like, oh, I reckon my PB, I'm in trouble here. I'm going backwards a little bit. And I was just hurting. Like nothing really major. Like, I didn't feel like I was going to cramp. Like I didn't cramp in this race. It was just fatigue. I don't know if I was just nothing that I can really put it down to, just fatigued. And then I remember I ran nearly, I think it was here, 38K was 3:59. I thought, oh, I'm in, not that I had lap splits coming up, but looking at that, I remember feeling pretty rubbish at that point. I picked it up a bit at 39 because that was right when that group that I dropped at 26K came flying past me at about 38, 39K. And I thought, oh, that's what I get. That's exactly what I get for trying to drop them at 26K. You idiot. And then I had a little giggle to myself. I thought, oh, that's funny. And then went past 40K. And at that point, it was just like, get to the finish. Like I didn't even really care about the PB at that point. I was like, I thought I was going to miss it at that point. I thought I was on track for about 2:33. I'm like, I'm still going to run hard, but I just want this thing to be done. And then got to about a K to go and thought, oh, I reckon I'm going to be fairly close, but I reckon this is going to be like I'll miss it by 10 seconds and be like, damn it, I got so close. And then you take that left-hand turn with pretty much about 800-900 meters to go, or it's about a kilometer to go. And that's when you can see the Brandenburg Gate for the first time. And you kind of, for me, I thought that moment I was going to turn and just have this like burst of energy and like take off down the road. But it was just like utter relief of like, oh, the finish line's just past that. Like, thank goodness. Like, I just want this thing to be done. So I ran down that road and I was like, looking at my watch, I was like, oh, I think I'm going to miss my PB, but I kept running hard. And then I remember I went under the gate. I think it's about 385 meters. I think that was telling. Yeah. It's just under the lap of the track. And I remember looking at my watch and I think I had like, I thought my PB was 2:32:48. And I was like, oh, I reckon I've only got like a minute 20 or a minute 15 or something. I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I'll run hard anyway. And I remember looking at the clock as I was sprinting and I looked at my watch because it took me 35 seconds to get across the start line. So I was a bit behind the clock. And then I looked at my watch like as I crossed the line, I stopped it right on the line and it said 2:32:50. And in my head, I was like, are you kidding? Like I said all that and missed it by 2 seconds. Like, oh, well, whatever. I'm finished anyway. Like, I got my medal. I was like, that's all good. Like I was still pretty happy with it. And I think a couple of people that I saw, Ty and Rennie, and then we ran to a couple of people, someone said like, oh, did you get your PB? And I was like, oh, I think I missed it by 2 seconds. Like I had no idea. I thought I missed it. And it wasn't until I got my phone back and I was like, I need to go back and check that. So one of the first things I did when I got my phone was like, get out my Gold Coast official results. And I was like, then I brought up the Berlin results and I was like, hang on a minute. I've got it by a second. Like, how good is that? That turned it around a bit for me. I said, look, it doesn't matter if it's a second or 10 minutes. It's a PB.
The 24-hour flight is worth the second, isn't it? And to say as well, I mean, to say your PB's in Berlin, that is something. It's way better than saying PB's at the Gold Coast. Or
to be honest, it was one of those ones, like if you told me that before I went that I was going to run like a 1 second PB, I would have been like, oh, I'll be a bit disappointed with that. Like I feel like I'm in better shape than that. But looking back on it, given just like the travel we had and just how everything was kind of feeling in the days leading up to it, like the other side of the world, different time zone and whatnot, I was happy with it. Like I think that was a better run than what I did at Gold Coast purely because of like just the logistics of where we were and the travel and everything, yeah. I was way happier, because it's just hard to execute when you're in the other side of the world, different room, different place, just everything's different. So I was actually pretty happy kind of looking back on the fact that I did execute, because there were so many things that could have affected it and caused it to go wrong. So the fact that it went pretty well, like I'm still PB, I was pretty happy with it looking back, because I think it could have gone significantly worse than it did.
And like you said, you paced it really well. I remember when I was talking to Ben at that time, we were looking at your splits and I was saying, like, you're a minute behind where you were at the Gold Coast at a certain point. But then you ran the back half obviously faster than you did at the Gold Coast. So, yeah, the fact you paced it so well was awesome. That was a well-executed run. And I'd be fascinated to know how many people actually have a PB overseas as opposed to one in their local country. I think going overseas, certainly the distance that we have to go to Europe, makes it phenomenally hard. Like you said, you're on the ground for, 4 days before your race, plus you got family with you. And, like you said, different room, different climate, got to get over jet lag. You know, all those things are massive. They're huge things. So to run the race you did it's a remarkable performance. It was awesome.
I was happy with it. And the only thing that I wasn't is, like, I feel like I've done the exact same thing the last three marathons. Like my how it's unfolded has been exactly the same. And I remember looking back and I was like, whenever I do my next one, I kind of want to go out at and go through halfway and closer to 1:16 and try and feel good and get to 30K and go, okay, let's go, and actually try and somewhat even split it just to kind of see how racing it like that, or even go out a touch slower than that and just see what that's like. Cause I feel like I kind of want to experience it like that and just find that sweet spot rather than kind of, just again, 2:30 is just this arbitrary time. Like if I'd gone for 2:30, 1:30, I probably would have run that. But it's just this time we pick because it's a nice even number. So I think that was something going back. I'm like, I've kind of done that a few times now. I kind of want to go a different tactic if I do another one and just see how that goes. And again, it's another training block afterwards anyway. So you're probably a bit fitter and do it a bit more comfortably. But looking back, I was happy with it. Other than obviously the scenery and whatnot, it felt really similar to Gold Coast. Like the weather was exactly the same. I felt like the way the race felt to me, like how I felt at pretty much all the different points, was very, very similar. But that's why I was kind of like, I need to go do something a bit different to experience the marathon in a different way to how I have the last three times. But amazing experience. Right. Like running with that many people was unbelievable. And you literally had people screaming at you the whole way. Like Gold Coast, you get patches of it, but it was like that the entire course. Like there wasn't really any quiet points. It was, really, really cool experience.
And what was the recovery like in the? Because you flew out the next day, didn't you? Almost immediately.
Yeah.
How did the next day. Tell us about the medal and the hours afterwards, and then into the journey.
So I got the medal pretty quickly afterwards, which I've still kind of got there, and I've kept my bib. That was the one thing that was hard, was to keep my bib out of Elsie's hands for the next 2 weeks of travel in the backpack, so she didn't rip it in half. But it's in one piece, and I got it home. You got the medal and nice medal. I don't know how much more information you want to have out of a medal. It was nice. It's sitting there with all my other medals.
Was it a medal that you'd expect from a major, or did you look at it and go?
It was funny. They had, I can't remember her first name, the Kenyan athlete Chipchirchir, who won the year before. She was on the back of the medal. That's interesting. Right. I didn't realize they put someone on the back of the medal. So it was kind of like the, I suppose, whatever the logo was for the race, and then she was on the back of it. It's a cool looking medal. Okay. So that was the medal. That was all good. And the other thing was we got these little tiny plastic timing chips that we had to put on our shoe. And I've still got it. I don't know what we're supposed to do with it, if we're supposed to give them back or not. So I've had this random timing chip sitting. I think I brought it back with me.
You'll get an email from them soon. In the next couple of weeks.
I don't know where we're supposed to put it. So I've got this chip. But anyway, kind of the plan was we had to, because the air, like the precinct's so big, I had to actually kind of plan with Caitlin where we were going to meet. So she was going to kind of get near the finish and just wait at this spot for me to get through everything and then get back to her. So got back to her and found her. And then kind of it was a decent walk. We had to perhaps walk back to the accommodation, got some food on the way back, and then it was kind of straight into holiday mode. There wasn't a whole lot of downtime there. We were flying out the next day, so it was more get some dinner and kind of get all our bags packed and ready to go for the morning. And we flew out to Switzerland the next day, which was it was kind of nice to get out and go somewhere different. And like I said, that was by far the pick of the trip. So if anyone's listening and thinking of where to go in Europe, it was absolutely stunning. It was by far my favorite location. I was about to say, very expensive. Yeah. So be prepared. My first introduction to Switzerland was we got to the airport and I thought, oh geez, I'm hungry. And we're walking through about to pick the hire car up, and I'm like, oh, the food court's there. I was like, KFC, perfect. I'll just get something quick and easy to eat. So I walked up to the little automated machine. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get like a Zinger burger meal or whatever it was. Like a burger, just a regular meal, not even large, just a regular meal, drink, chips, burger, and Caitlin got a burger, and it was $62 Australian. And I thought, oh yeah, okay, this place is expensive. I was like, $62 for that. But anyway, it was a good burger, so I was.
They're still on the Swiss franc, or have they changed to the euro?
Yeah, they're still on the franc.
Any country like that who hangs on to their own currency is going to make it expensive. Well, I mean, half the world's banks are there, aren't they, as well, like in Switzerland.
I know. Right? Yeah. But it was – so my takeaways from the trip, Tom, I was thinking about this. I'm like, what are my takeaways from Europe? This is my first time in Europe. First one, everyone smokes over there. I couldn't believe it. It feels like I'm back 20 years. Everyone. Yeah. There's an ashtray on every table. We were sitting in our hotel in Lyon looking over the road, and there was a bunch of police around, and one of them just pulled out a vape and started vaping on the side of the road. And I thought, you don't see that at home. Look twice. I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing was everyone was really skinny. I don't know if everywhere we went, except for Disneyland, but well, that's okay. A lot of other countries, tourists in Disneyland. Everyone was really skinny. That was an interesting observation.
Wow.
Yeah. Everyone rides bikes. No one wears helmets. That was my other thing I noticed when we were there. That's just it. I can see why they come over here and go, why are you finding me for not wearing a helmet? What are you talking about? we went past one guy riding through the city. He had his shopping and three kids with him, and he was just on his bike. And I thought, you'd struggle to find a car to fit all that stuff in Australia. And he's on a bike. He had like one on the front, two on the back. He's shopping off the side. It was very impressive. But yeah, everyone smokes, number one. But no one uses indicators. I worked that out very quickly. They all drive like maniacs over there. And number three, the coffee is really expensive and terrible. That was
bad, isn't it? Yeah, it's shocking. It's so
unbelievable.
Bad.
Unbelievable. Oh, we were paying the cheapest coffee I reckon I got was probably close to $8 Australian, and that ranged from like $8 to $10 Australian. Half of them were machine coffees where you just put it in and like they just press the button and put a lid on for you. $9 for one of those. Anyway, we found this one cafe in Berlin. It was one of the best coffees I've ever had. It was right at the start of the trip.
What's the name of it? Do you remember?
I couldn't even tell you. I'll tell you. I'll have to find out afterwards and tell you because it was amazing.
One of my favorite coffee places in the world is in Berlin, and I'd love it to be the same one. Yeah,
I'll have to find out where it was. But anyway, it was probably like $10 for this little coffee, but it was amazing. And then I thought, oh, this is going to be the rest of the trip. We're going to find all these nice cafes. No, that was about 10 times better than any other coffee I had for the rest of the trip. But anyway, they were my main takeaways from Europe, Tom.
That's how Victorians feel when they come up to Queensland, I think, is that way towards the coffee. Now, the other thing, mountains like you've never seen before, like particularly in Switzerland.
I've seen all the photos. You know, you see all the stuff pop up on like Instagram and things, and you're like, that's all edited and Photoshop. There's no way it looks like that. It looks exactly like that. Unbelievable. Switzerland was probably the most like spectacular. And then we kind of got into Chamonix. Both of them were spectacular, but Chamonix, a beautiful place, kind of as you would expect. A lot more touristy than where we were in Switzerland, I found. Like it was a lot busier in Chamonix and way warmer than I thought. It was like t-shirt and shorts weather. It was getting up close to 30 most days. And I kind of got there and you just have to look like straight up. Like we just don't have mountains like that here.
Yeah.
And we were there for a few nights and I thought I need to try and get away and do one run. So I spent like a couple of nights trying to planning where I was going to go. So I picked out where I was going to go. And then I think maybe it would have been almost a week after the race. I thought, I'm going to do my one run in Chamonix and try and experience it all. So I got up reasonably early. And to sum it up, pretty much out the door, I had about 200 meters of flat. And then I ran uphill for an hour just to get up to like halfway up these mountains. So it's just, I was like, it was over a vertical K to start this run. I've never run a vertical K in my life. And I thought, I wonder how much I can run of this. Like a lot of it's switchbacks. So it's not super, super steep. But I wonder how far up I can run before I have to walk. I'm going to try and just like jog and shuffle my way up this switchback. Yeah. And I got to about 400 meters elevation. I was like, I'm hiking. I'm done with trying to run this thing. And it just went and went and went. It was hard.
So this was the loop. This was the loop that you planned where you finished on the end of the UTMB race.
Yeah, that was the plan. So I kind of, the UTMB course comes from the other direction, but I was kind of a bit further, I think, west, and I kind of went up and then across to that last checkpoint and then came down on the course.
Yeah.
So I went up this climb, and as I was going up, I was looking at the elevation going, I wonder if I can get under an hour for this vertical K. And I hit 1,000 meters in 59.30, and I thought, there's my vertical K PB. Yeah. I'll tick that off for the trip. And then ran up to the top where you kind of get up to where the ski lifts finish, and it kind of opens up above tree line and you can see everything. And that's where I got some of the photos that I posted. And The other thing up there, it's so technical. I couldn't believe how technical it was to run on. Like, Narang's like a bloody road compared to some of these trails. Like, no, I'm never going to complain about the rocks in Narang again, because this was on a whole nother level. And I knew that the trail I picked across the top was reasonably technical. Like, I had said it was one of the more technical ones, but one of the popular ones. And I was running like 7 minute Ks, and it was like flat or downhill. I was just trying to move. It was really slow going, but got across to the La Flagère, which is the last checkpoint for UTMB. So everyone have seen those footage where they're kind of running up the open ski runs, and then they come up over the top, they go through the little tent, and then they kind of turn left and bomb down that ski run. So I did the exact, like, I remember I actually looked at it. I'm like, I've watched this trail so many times. I'm going to actually go and do the exact one. So kind of went up to where that checkpoint was, came down. You take this random little turn down this little steep part, exactly like I've watched on the videos. And then I followed that exact descent from there, like right into the finish line. And I'd looked on the segment the night before, and I thought, I wonder like what kind of time I could run going down this there compared to what these guys are running. And Robbie Simpson had the crown, and it averaged 3:34 pace. And I'm like, for say like 4 kilometers of this 6 or 7 kilometer descent, I'm like, well, if he's running 3:34s, like, it's obviously still a bit technical. I've watched the videos, but I should be able to run like, you know, 4:30, 5 minute Ks when I'm running down this hill, like, surely. Yeah. No, definitely not. No. So I was running down, like, my legs were smashed as it was. And then everyone would have probably watched the last descent of UTMB at some point, watching some of the leaders run down it. And they look like they're just flying. Like, it's just these nice smooth switchbacks. And just, it was one of the most technical descents I've ever done. Like, I remember I've watched the video since and gone, I just don't know how they make that look so easy.
Yeah.
Like, it was slow going. I think I averaged like 6:40 for the descent. And I felt like I was running, like, my legs were smashed, but as fast as I could, given what my legs felt like. And by the end, I was done. I felt like I'd run 100 Ks by the time I finished that run. My legs were absolutely smashed and kind of ran into town, which was nice. You know, you feel like you almost finished in UTMB, did all the little turns that they do in the video. I just didn't do the last left-hand bend into the finish line. I had to go left to accommodation. I was like, I'll leave that last 50 meters for if I ever do a race here. But it was, I remember I got back, it was like 18 Ks or whatever it was. It took me nearly 2.5 hours. And after, I was 10 times more sore from that run than I was from Berlin. Like, it was worlds apart. Like, Berlin was like a day or two of like, you know, calves and quads are a little bit tight. I was like hobbling, getting out of bed like a week after that run in Chamonix. It was so much harder on my body than Berlin. That's awesome. Was. Probably my lack of heels, but it was spectacular at the same time and just cool to kind of finally get on those trails. But it gave me an appreciation for how hard it is to run over there. Like, I feel like you kind of think you know what it would be like, but it was just like the word I would use for those mountains, they were just like aggressive. Like, there was just no easy parts of it. Like, you're either running uphill for an hour or two, or you're running super technical stuff where you're trying to descend and not fall over and, you know, break a wrist. It was hard going. Like, so I'm like, that kind of was nice to do it, to go, if I ever go and race one of those races over there, I kind of know what I'm in for. I got a little taste of what it's like to run on those trails, and it's really, really tough. So I'll be looking for the rockiest, steepest parts of Narang, Tom, if I ever need to prepare for that.
And does it make you appreciate how good the French and the, you know, particularly the French are on their own terrain? Like, we know that the Americans, except for this year with Jim Walmsley, have not done particularly well in the mail race. So do you appreciate now the technicality of training in Europe on those particular climbs and those terrains?
Yeah, and just I was just thinking while I was on the run, I was like, if I was training on this stuff every day, geez, you'd be strong. Like, it was just hard going the whole way. And I'm like, this is all they've got. Like, they're either running flat around town, or you're running uphill for at least like 30, 40 minutes just to get anywhere, to get to a descent or a flat trail. Like, it was just harsh terrain. And I know there's obviously more runnable stuff around that mountain range than just where I was, but if that's where you train, like, you get fit very, very quickly. And you can see, like, if you don't have access to that stuff, there's just nothing like it. Like, we just don't have climbs here where you can run uphill for an hour. Like, we just got nowhere near, maybe half that at best, but we just have nothing.
Does it, like, I know you've mentioned in the past, eventually, you know, getting involved in UTMB, does it make you reassess which race you'd go into? Like, would you now look at doing maybe OCC, like a 50K rather than 100 or 100 mile? Like, does it, having seen that, does it scare you for what the 100 or the UTMB 170 would be like?
I think I would probably still go for like a CCC first. I feel like it's just, I would probably now, the amount of time I'd probably dedicate to that training block would probably be more than I would have otherwise. So I think just the amount of specific training I would do, very different to how I've been training the last couple of years. I'd probably reshuffle how I did everything, and approach training would be very different. But it's probably still, I don't know if I can go straight to UTM, but like, well, you have to race generally 100 mile to qualify anyway. Yeah. So it wouldn't be for a few years at minimum. But yeah, I think I'd have to do something a bit shorter first just to, I think almost everyone would probably underestimate it coming from here. Like even compared with the 100 miles and 100 Ks we've got here, nothing prepares you for it. Now there's probably some races down, like say Northburn in New Zealand or Alpine, what's the Alpine one called down in the Alps down in Victoria. Some of those real mountain type races that would probably be, get you prepared. But if you've only kind of raced around kind of say Queensland or even New South Wales, like it's just different over there. You just have to be a super strong runner and just, your legs got to be strong because it's hard going. Like there's no easy runs. Like that's one thing I thought. I'm like, where do you do your easy runs over here? Like you couldn't make it easy unless you go for a hike. Like if you're running up this hill, like it's hard to run up the hill. So either hiking or I suppose a lot of them probably do a lot of hiking and that's why they get so strong. But yeah, just amazing. Really cool experience.
Well, I think I heard Dylan Bowman talk about, how good it was that Jim Walmsley won UTMB, but he made the comment that he had to go and live like a Frenchman in order to win UTMB. He was over there for 2 years. He couldn't train in America and come over and win it. He had to go live the French lifestyle, live on the farm, live in the mountains, do the elevation in order to win that race. So
I wonder if anyone's actually won that race not training in the Alps before it. Like I don't know if anyone has. Like, well, the women have. I know the American women have, but on the men's side, I'm like, I wonder if any of the non-Europe, either that have trained in the States or trained anywhere in the world except for the Alps, have gone and won there. I'm like, it seems like you go and train there to win that race. Like, if you're not training there, you're not going to be up. You're not going to win it. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to go look at the results, but it was eye-opening to see it in person.
I'm not sure Hellfire. Well, that's probably the closest thing we've got, isn't it? You'd be doing reps of Hellfire just to get yourself ready for it.
It was steep, but it was so technical and just kept going. Like even like there was parts where I'm like, I couldn't even run this if I was fresh. Like you're just kind of stepping up over big like branches and rocks and we just got nothing like it. Like you just couldn't, it would be really hard to prepare really well for it here. You could, but it just, it's not quite the same.
Yeah. And then from there, then you looped around back up into, so is that when you went to Lyon, was it? And up into Paris?
Yeah, so this was the other thing, Tom. We drove from Chamonix to Lyon, 2.5 hours. I think we paid something like $70 in tolls to do that 2.5 hour drive. Unbelievable.
What were you like? What were you like on the other side of the road? Were you good?
So the thing that I thought I was going to like turn the wrong way off the roundabout or miss an exit. I was more worried about like turning the wrong way. The bit I found the hardest was like getting in the right spot in the lane, like driving on the left hand side of the car. You've got to be on the left hand side of the lane. I kept just kind of veering towards the right. That was the bit I found the hardest. But the other thing over there, like all the highways are like 130 Ks an hour and there's still people flying past you over there, but you get everywhere very quickly. Oh, that was one thing I quite enjoyed. Everyone can like, they drive like maniacs, but they can all drive. Like over here, there's like a combination of like people who can drive and drive really aggressively and people who don't know how to drive and don't drive aggressively and it doesn't work. Whereas over there, like they all drive like crazy, but you never feel like you're going to get in a crash. Like everyone knows you drive like that. They all drive like that and it works.
Yeah.
It just doesn't not the same as here.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That sounds like quite a trip. Before we leave it all behind, let's go favorite meal that you had over there. Did you have anything quintessentially like German or French or Swiss
if I actually went through all the meals we had a lot of Uber Eats because the other part of traveling with a baby, Tom, is once they go to sleep, you can't just leave them in the room and go have dinner. So there was a lot of, what have we got on Uber Eats tonight? We found this when we were in Paris, there was this little kind of kebab type shop and it was amazing. Had to have it a few nights because it was just downstairs and there wasn't many other options, but unbelievable. That was one of those meals I was like, oh, I could have this most nights for dinner. It was delicious. There was some not great meals as well. There was probably more not great meals than there was amazing meals. A lot of croissants and baguettes, a lot of bread when we were in France, which Caitlin was a bit over by the end, but I love my bread. So I could have
European bread. Amazing. Yeah, definitely.
There was some really good bread. And there was one of the only funny things was we're at a buffet and I thought, oh, look at all these different types of cheeses. I'll get this little croissant, put this bit of cheese on, bit of ham. Oh, delicious. I was like, geez, this tastes nice. And then by like the third time I went back, I worked out they were butter sticks, not cheese sticks. And I thought, well, they were tasting great. They were next to all the cheese. It looked like cheese.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, that was. Then I thought, that doesn't taste like cheese. But anyway, I ate a few of them. just a well-buttered croissant. But no, and it was good. I mean, it was good.
So the travel bug is now infectious. You're planning another one?
No. There was multiple times on that trip. I said never again. We're staying on the Gold Coast forever. That's not doing that again. Yeah. I said if someone asked us, would we do this again in a few weeks? Not a chance. Yeah. Not a chance. It was amazing. We saw some really cool stuff. But also I was like, it makes you appreciate home. Like, we've got it pretty good here. Like, we saw some really cool things, but we live in a pretty amazing place here. So it was nice to be home at the same time.
You packed a lot in. I mean, you're traveling with a, 14, 15 month old. You go and do a major marathon. You got to multiple countries, and see the amount of things that you saw in, how many days were you actually on the ground there? Must have been 2 weeks, was it? 2.5 weeks?
3 weeks. 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Like, yeah, a huge amount in that time. You pretty much had no downtime. When we go next year, we've got 3 months. There's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of just hanging around in the towns in Germany where Teresa's from. So it'll be very, very different. But I do like that shirt, Kyle. That's it. That is impressive.
It is a nice shirt. I was very happy with that one.
It's worth checking out the video. If you're listening to the podcast here, it's worth checking out the video just to see that shirt of Kyle. We did hope he'd come back with something trail runnish. And
I tell you what, for all the trail runners, Tom, if you save up and go to Chamonix, because all the brands have shops in Chamonix on that street, and they have all the latest gear. You know, we always look at all this gear and you're like, I didn't see much compressed sport stuff, actually, to be honest. But like Killian's normal brand and stuff, all those shoes are there. Like, you go into like the Adidas Terex, they have their own shop there that's got like all of their elite athletes, like race shoes are in the cabinets and stuff. And all, you know, over here we get like one piece of like the latest like elite kit, and it's really hard to get. They had everything, like every piece of elite kit you could possibly want. You could, like, the Salomon shop in the main street of Chamonix had everything. All the latest shoes, socks, shorts, hats, packs, everything. So if anyone needs any new gear,
should have given you. Should have left your North singlet behind. Just put that in the shop window there. We're open. The North category, we're open to expanding this geographically. If we can take in the Northern Hemisphere. We're happy about that. So we'll take anyone from there. And we have been very, very delighted, the people, since you came back, to see the runs in Narang, and impressively this morning as well. Although I was annoyed that you didn't do the 4.0 for Summer Goats, I did it. It's one of the first times I think I've seen you do that size loop in Narang from your doorstep.
The first time after living here for all these years, I feel like I'm finally taking advantage of the fact that I can get into the forest in about 20 seconds from my driveway. And it was great. Just got up and I could get straight in there. It was good.
What's it been like being back and then going just straight into Narang?
Oh, tough. I feel really unfit. That was probably my first takeaway. It's warmer than before we left, that's for sure. Yeah. It's been good though. I felt like this morning's run, I was like, it definitely got tough as it got warmer, but I was like, I'm just going to try and like run the hills relatively strong, and then I'm just going to recover on like the flats and the downs. And I kind of finished and I went, that was a pretty good pace for a run like that. Like, I actually felt like I could have kept running, and it was a good sign that I'm heading in the right direction. I feel like I'm still weeks away from feeling good in the hills, but I did like 1200 meters elevation this week. That's my biggest elevation week in like forever. since this podcast started, Tom. So I'm back. I'm in the hills.
We eagerly await now what's next for you, and we'll certainly get to that. But that sounds like a stellar trip. That's awesome. We did say we were going to talk for half an hour on it, but it sounded so good. We've gone well over. We're 43 minutes. So if you've rejoined us at the half an hour, you've probably motivated you got a bit to get of it. To yeah, absolutely. You got the trail running part.
That's right.
So Kyle, while you've been away, Kyle, this, like I said, it must be 6 weeks since the last podcast we did together. So a fair bit has happened. What do you want to go to? What do you want to chat about? Well, what do you want to know? Because you've done a lot of talking, so it's time for you to
have done a lot of talking. Well, I think it's fitting that we probably go to Blackall first, because I didn't realize you were doing some on-the-ground updates. Oh, I got excited when I saw this. I thought, this is perfect. Got Tom giving me updates. So, I want to hear about Blackall, because this is obviously like one of the, if not the biggest race in Southeast Queensland when it comes to ultras. Everyone looks forward to it every year. It's kind of the almost the finale of Southeast Queensland trail running for the year. It seems like it's kind of the last big one that everyone kind of targets. And it's an exciting race. So I was excited to know that I was going to be getting live updates from you and Megan throughout the day, which was fantastic. And you guys did a great job of that.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was absolutely so much fun. So this year, Simon and Brett there, they got Ben Dineen on the microphone, and they asked Megan and I to go around and to sort of just do some live updates of the male and the female race, which was awesome, but became very, very difficult as the day progressed, because of the calibre of the winner in the Blackall 100 meant that I was getting stretched and having to make decisions about, do I get to checkpoint 5? can I then get to six and get to the finish by the time he gets there? But before I go into the race itself, Kyle, there's one thing I want to point out is you've done the Black All 100.
And I was going to bring this up, Tom, because did you look at the results? Did you look at the results? Because I did this about half an hour ago and thought, hang on a minute. Like, I'm supposed to send an email of this.
As much as we dislike the holding hands across the line, was that you and Troy Lethlean pretty much did that.
Yeah.
And they've given him.
I know. I just saw that. My name's not even on this list.
So Simon from Run Queensland, I'm sure you are listening. So just as an objection here from Kyle, who's newly returned to trail running, and he'd like to be reinstated as joint
on this page. 2018, there we are. Just Troy.
What's the gap? What is the gap on by the time? Is it a tenth of a second?
Let's have a look. I've clicked on the results. They're loading.
It's so good.
It's put a 2 second gap, which look, I'll protest that to start with, because
that's fair enough. That's a margin.
That's fair enough, actually. That's very much fair enough. It's not even like it's the same time. So that's
So we
just jumped in front of Troy. Nah, you can. Troy's won the race. He's already had a first. Like, surely you can give me the third. Surely.
Yeah. So protest withdrawn. Yeah, protest withdrawn there, Simon. We're okay with it for 2 seconds. No, look, mate, it was a wonderful weekend. Got up there late Friday evening. And then, woke up Saturday and went with Megan around from the first couple of checkpoints, and then we sort of separated by about checkpoint three at about 40-odd kilometres as George Murray, who ended up winning the men's, just started to put a bit of a gap into it. But, yeah, the week beforehand we did a preview show with Brett and with Megan and with Ben, and we talked through the contenders and we talked through the course and went back through the history a bit, which was really good just to get across it, because 10 years of Blackall is a remarkable achievement. And they've had some outstanding performances there. And, you know, when you look at the caliber of the people who've won it and certainly the closeness of particularly the female races, that what was really became apparent was how close the female races have been year after year. And this year was no different whatsoever. So in the preview show, where we went through the females, and I sort of tipped Buha Bali to win it, because I saw her up at BTU when she did the 110 there, saw how fresh she was, and then saw the time that she did at Coastal High and thought, this girl's got speed and she's also got the legs to go 110. Like, this, surely this could be her race. And I don't know if you've seen it, Kyle, but go back and have a look in the highlights of the female race where Lou Betts and Buha come into the checkpoint together.
And she takes off on the other side of it.
Well, she overtakes her coming into the checkpoint. They both come in together.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And then they leave at the same time. The best thing about that checkpoint was that we'd just been sitting there for 10 or 15 minutes listening to a bit of music. Brad Glover was there, and because we were waiting for Kieran O'Brien to come in. And Brad said to me, he goes, oh, you haven't chosen a song, Tom. Like, do you want a song? And I said, oh, look, you know, just put some Rammstein on, put Du Hast on, a big Rammstein German metal band. And as the females, as the two came in, Lou Betts and Buha, Rammstein is blaring from the loudest volume possible. It was just fitting. It was so fitting. But it was to track it was absolutely wonderful. You know, you get so motivated doing this again or just watching it and observing it. And you realize that it's one thing to race an ultra, and then just we were effectively crewing pretty much. We were following the top three or four around. So you're pretty much being almost like a crew member, but just, you know, going from checkpoint to checkpoint. And there's so much joy in that. There's so much wonder and awe to follow people through the race. And it's just absolutely motivating. I called Teresa halfway through the day and said, I don't care how we do it or who does it, one of us is doing this next year. We've got to do it. And it made me wonder as well why, you know, I've started the 50 but not finished the 50 a couple of years back. I've wondered why I've never done more Blackalls, because I've been aware of it. I've always loved it. I think it's purely, A, like you said, it's kind of at the back end of the winter race calendar, and also, as people on here probably know, my sweat rate is particularly high, and I think the fact that Blackall can get warm, it can get really hot. Like down at CP3, so right down the bottom before they climb the bluff, that was baking hot. That was so hot down there. I was just standing there and just dripping in sweat, you know. And so it is testing conditions. They've had fires there, haven't they? They've had torrential rain. They've had thunderstorms. They've had all sorts of different things, course changes. But it is, like you said, certainly for the 100, it's the top 100 in Southeast Queensland, it's got to be. And the 50s up there, and that's a remarkable course as well. So let's go through some results, Kyle, and I guess when I get to the 100, I can talk a little bit more about that. But do you want to go through the 21 and the 50? And then I guess I'll go through the 100 in a bit more detail, because that's the one that I followed.
Yeah. So
in the 21. So we'll go through the females first. So Georgina Beach was third in 2:15:03. She was only 1 minute behind Chriselle Gilmore in 2:14:10. And then Emily Burns took the win if the females end overall in 2:00 flat and 33 yep. seconds. So cracking run from Emily there to she's towed everyone up by a mile. She's won by a long way. So that's a cracking run.
Course record.
Yeah. Fine. Yep. So 2 hours flat on that course is phenomenal. And then in the males, we had Chris Fitzpatrick. He was third in 2:11:02. Nigel Reed, second, 2:07:03. And then Yannick Thirault in 2:04:15.
Yep.
Good running. Good to see. It's reasonably close there in the males, actually. What, a few minutes between first, second, and third? But yeah, Emily, that's the pick of the 21K runs. So that's a fantastic run. That's so good to see. Victoria, I did see that at the day and thought that's a great run. Yeah.
I think, is it Victoria Beck? Is that, I think that was who had the course record before, the North Face athlete. I think she had the 201. I think that was her name, last name.
Yeah,
Victoria.
Okay, so it was close. So she just got it. Yeah.
Yep. She did. And the 50, Kyle, some good running there as well.
Yeah. So we go females first. Jessie Lohier, she was 5:23. She was 2 minutes behind Sarah Ryan, who was in third. And then Jane Hoskin, familiar name on the podcast, does quite a lot of running around Southeast Queensland. She took the win in 5:02. That's a great run. 5:02 is flying on that 50 course. So well done to Jane. And then in the males, we had Grant Edwards in third, 4:49. Ryan Patterson, second, 4:39. And then Sam Dermody, he did 4:31. Again, that's some fast times in the guys there. First two sub 4:40. Really, really impressive.
So I've got some stats really there. I mean, from Jeremy Patch was in the 50 as well. And so we were following a few people from North who were sort of up there, and we were looking at Jeremy. And I think he mentioned, or someone else mentioned around him, that it was actually a particularly fast race. And so the top six men were all sub five hours, which is outstanding. Jane Hoskin, 5:02. So she won last year in 5:12. So she's gone 10 minutes faster this year for the win. And Sam Dermody's time, so he was third in the 100 last year. So his 4:31, only Brian Wilder, Vince Fletcher and Ben Duffers have gone faster on that standard 50-kilometre course than Sam's time there. So you can see how fast that is. That is an incredibly quick year to have the top six males under 5 hours, and the lead female pretty close to breaking five as well. So that's fast times. It's a beautiful course, the 50. It is a wonderful course, very quick. First 20-odd kilometres down to the checkpoint, up the couple of climbs, then up to the 40-odd kilometres and then into the finish. So, yeah, great conditions for them.
You missed Jared Medhurst too there, Tom. Don't know if he listens to the podcast. 2018 here in 4:29.
4:29?
He could be a real long. He could have been here since episode one. We've just missed someone.
Was that the change course?
This was the year before the year after the two alternate courses. That was the year Ben Duffus ran 4:19.
Okay. I only looked at first.
So sorry, Jared. I'm sure he listens to every episode. He's going to be sitting there going, oh, guys, I've run 4:29. There you go.
Unsubscribe, Jared, from us. Unsubscribe if you're unhappy. But there you go. and, of course, then the 100. So, the female race. So Angelique Plier in 12:21. She was an early leader in the female race and someone that we didn't know too much about coming into this. We had to look up her ITRA sort of details as she took an early lead. But by sort of 20-odd kilometres, I think the girls had sort of pegged her back and she was back in sort of third place by then and sort of hung on really well for that. Lou Betts in 12:11. She led for a little section of it and, has done very, very well at Blackall in the past and is a bit of a return to Blackall now. So there was a lot of excitement around her. Megan talked very highly of her. She's raced her quite a bit. And, Lou had the lead for – Lou took the lead, I think, from Angelique and led that pretty much, as we said, when her and Buhar came into that checkpoint together, which was outstanding. And then Buhar Bali, 11:41. So she's ended up winning by half an hour when they came into the same checkpoint. What was that checkpoint? At 64 kilometres where they came in together and left together. Mm-hmm. So she's put half an hour into her in the last 36 kilometres. So she's finished incredibly well. And the way that she came into the QCCC at the end, I was on the camera on the outside of QCCC and Megan then filmed from the inside of the hall and I was running next to her and struggling to keep up. She was finishing with that much freshness in her legs. Like, it was just wonderful to watch. And what a remarkable year she's had. To say she's second to BTU in the 110. That time at Coastal High, just I think only Risha is, Risha's time is a little bit quicker, but it's almost as fast as Risha's time at Coastal High. And then to go 11 hours 41 and win the Black Hall 100, that is a phenomenal back half of the year, isn't it? Well, three or four months, really.
Very, very impressive.
Buha's been around for a bit. We've talked a bit about her in the BOR at night and BOR at daybreak kind of races, but seems to have stepped up this year to the 100Ks, you know, BTU and now at Black Hall. So, yeah, it'd be great to see how she goes at the bigger races around the country, something like UTA or COSI, something like that, the ones on the UTMB circuit. So, yeah, well done. Fabulous female race. As I said, going into it, the preview show, we talked about the fact you can't pick it. You can have your favourite, who you think's going to win, but you couldn't pick it. There were six or seven girls that you could just throw a blanket over and say it could be any of them who has the better day. And, you know, Buha paced it superbly. She sat back in the early stages and let the other girls make the running and then, you know, made the move at 60-odd kilometres and came through for the win. So, yeah, just brilliant. Then in the male race, so this is the one that I followed closely all day. So this ended up being wonderful to watch, but for vastly different reasons. So George Murray, I'll talk about him straight away. He got the win in 9 hours 34. George pretty much had this, you know, for those who don't know, George was the UTA 100 champion from this year. Recently as well, just obliterated the Coastal High 50 course record. What did he run? 4:11, I think. He ran 4:11, take 4:12.
Yep.
You know, put 20 minutes into the Coastal High 50. This guy, I think his ITRA ranking, I said in the preview show, is 833, which for, you get people, don't you, in the 700s, and then you get the pros who are up high, but rarely do you come across someone, you know, in the amateur world, I guess, if I can call it that, that has an ITRA ranking of 833. That's just outstanding. And he took this by the scruff of the neck from before they get to, you know, Condalilla Falls, from that very before you even go through the first checkpoint, the couple of times that you do it. He had a couple of minutes ahead at that stage. And I was comparing his times to Ryan Crawford's time at various checkpoints because Ryan's got the course record for this standard course. And early on, George was 1 or 2 minutes ahead. And then never looked back from that particular moment. There was one checkpoint, again, that same checkpoint at 64, checkpoint four, where he came to the aid station, spoke to the volunteer. The volunteer said, "Do you need anything? You know, can I get you any food or whatever?" And he said, "Oh, look, how far is it to the next checkpoint?" And she said, "Oh, look, it's 8 to the water and then it's 10. And he kind of just tapped his water vest and went, "Nah, I'll be good." And then off he went. It was just remarkable to watch. Just he spent 30 seconds, 40 seconds in there, fine, I've got enough for the next 18 kilometres in the heat of the day. And, you know, to witness someone run at that pace was awesome. And he wasn't, at one stage between checkpoint 5 and 6, I don't think he was the fastest through that. So whether he tired a bit at the end or whether he just pulled the pace back, you know, because he knew he had the course record and he knew he had the victory, I don't know. But he was certainly awesome the whole day. In second place then, this was a very special moment. I got to run with Liam Therrens a little bit at 95, 96 kilometres as he came out of the Mapleton Falls before you do the road section on the way home. And I ran with him for a minute and I just said, you know, what's it like stepping up from the 50 to the 100? And he said, this race means so much to him. This is his local race, his home race. He's loyal to Blackall. And, you know, we were so happy that Liam, because he's, you know, he's well known and well liked around the place, to come through and to get second in 10 hours 45. That's an awesome performance from Liam. And
phenomenal run.
Was tipped by a couple of people for potentially the win, you know, in the week or two beforehand. So you never know how someone like George is going to go. You can, you know, if George doesn't have a particularly good race, then maybe these guys can come through. But 10:45, well done. Well done, Liam. Congratulations. He's stepped up from the 50 in the previous years. And then third place, Daniel Caswell in 11 hours and 9 minutes. So Daniel was running with a guy called Leif Christensen early on. They were sort of tying for sort of third and fourth together. And Daniel at one stage looked like he was dropping off, but he ended up finishing the back half of the race particularly well. The guy who was in second, he ended up DNFing. And this is the one thing I want to mention about Liam. When Liam got to checkpoint 3 at the bottom of the bluff, he was in fifth and sixth, I think, together with Kieran. I might be wrong there. It might have been fourth or fifth. But anyway, he was you know, back in the middle of the lead group. By the time he got to the top of the bluff, that checkpoint, so from checkpoint 3 to checkpoint 4, he'd gone from fifth or sixth to second. It was the move of the day. It was outstanding to see. And, you know, I remember when he came into the checkpoint and I was filming, I said, this is the move of the day. This is outstanding. And he said to me afterwards, he didn't particularly target that section of the race. He felt like he was slowing, but he thinks that everyone else just slowed a little bit more than him, but it was perfectly paced. And that kind of set Liam up for his second place. Daniel also held his position in that spot and then finished it well in 11.09. And, you know, we then had a few other runners in fourth, fifth and sixth who were pretty close together. So, yeah, look, Kyle, it was a wonderful thing to film and a wonderful thing to follow and incredibly motivating. Great to see some local talent doing well and getting on the podium. Great to see some, well, I guess we would call George international since he's won, you know, UTA. Yeah, you could say he's international. To see someone like that run and to smash the record by 20 odd minutes. So yeah, I drove home Saturday night then, got back at 11:30 and straight into fathering duties the next day and doing a bit of housework. But the enthusiasm from Blackall has stayed with me for this last week, and
that's good.
Eagerly planning next year.
So Blackall 2024.
Head to head, Kyle. You and me in the 100. Let's do it. I'll be back from three months of heavy carbohydrates in Europe. The bread that you were talking about, brilliant race. Let's go to shorter distances, Kyle. We've got round one and round two of the SEQ. So round one was at Enoggera a couple of weeks back. Round two was this morning at Pomona. So let's fly through the results here. What do you?
Yeah, I've got Enoggera. I've got them up right here. So Enoggera, this is round one of the series. Yeah, playing some catch up here from a couple of weeks ago. So we'll go through the short course first. Caitlin Price was third, 44:49. Jessica Richards, second, 42:48. Selwyn Russell, another familiar name. She took the win, 39:52. Good start to the series from the ladies in the short course. And then in the male short course, we had Mitchell Collins was third, 37:05. Brad Aird, second, 35:43. That's about his 758th podium for the year, I reckon, Brad. He's done really well. And then Julian Tubman, he took the win in 34:17. So we're going to have to remember those names, see which ones pop up when we go to round two in a second.
Yep.
Long course in the females, Crystal Footer in 110:21, Ashley O'Loughlin, 107:20. And then Katie McLean, 106:55. So pretty close there in the ladies for first and second. And then in the males, Zach Newsham, 56:29 was third. Oliver Cook, second, 55:51. And Andy Day took the win in 53:55. So Andy's back running the SEQ series. Did he do much last year? It was 2 years ago, wasn't it, that he...
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago, yeah. So no Blaine Burke in that everyone. One. Blaine was the series winner last year. Oliver Cook...
He was fifth. Third. I've got it here. He was fifth.
I was Blaine fifth.
He did race. Yeah, he was here. He was fifth in 57:06. Okay. Matt Cooper was fourth, just ahead of him. He was there.
Yeah, we'll keep those names in our mind for next weekend for when the cut comes around. Blaine and Matt are both down for the cut, so that's interesting. Oliver Cook, second. He was third in the series last year. So I'll go through the Pomona results now. Let's see if we've got some similar names. Short course, females. Sheridan Bernays, have I pronounced that right? I've scribbled that down.
Yep.
39:50.
Yep.
Right. Amandine Tenner in 38:51. Course record for the win, Matilda Dewig, 33:50. So massive win there, 5 minutes for the win. And a course record. This is series number 11 for SEQ. So course records are tough to get now. They were giving them away early in the first few rounds, first few years, but now they're tough to get. You've got 11 years of history to get through. In the males, Carl Arganda, 34:26. Chris Fitzpatrick, 33:05. There you go, Kyle. Julian Tubman, 29:12. Smashing win. A new name. We haven't come across Julian before, so it's good.
Good
it's
one exciting, to follow. Bro. This is what we want to see.
Then in the long course, Katie Booth, 102:28. Beth McKenzie, 102:21. Ella McCartney, 1 hour flat and 54 seconds. Then here come the names from last year. So in the long course at Pomona, Blaine Burke, 56:26. Oliver Cook, 56 flat. Phil Bradshaw, 54:56. So there's Blaine and Oliver in it like they were last year. So that'll heat up. The next one is at Dunambar in 2 weeks' time, as it starts to heat up, and that's a particularly tough course down there. So we'll watch that with interest and see how that all unfolds. The female names from last year don't seem to be there. But as I said, Oliver Cook is there. Brad was in the mix last year. Blaine Burke was in the mix as well for the win last year. So, yeah, we'll follow that eagerly. But, Kyle, also happening, let's not discount one of another great series trail running events that we have in its third version this year. Summer Goats. We got through September.
And I have to make a point here, Tom, because I've had a few comments from people saying, oh, we've heard about you guys talking about Summer Goats. What the hell are these loops and what's Summer Goats? So I feel like we need to just like quickly rehash like what Summer Goats is. I said I'd remember to do this. Okay. So to sum it up quickly for people that don't know, there's the Goat Loop, the original Goat Loop, the 6.8 kilometer loop that everyone knows about. And then there's the Goat Loop 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, which go further out into the forest. And you'll be able to see everyone doing these on Strava to find the loops. We've got a competition that each month we start at 5.0. That was September. Currently doing 4.0. Next month, November, is going to be 3.0. December, you run 2.0. January, you run 1.0. So now everyone knows like what we're doing with it. If you need like real specific details, just go follow someone like Brad Aird or someone who does all the loops every month and you'll find the segment.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom, carry on with Summer Goats. Yes.
And if you win it, you get 10 points. If you come 10th, you get 1 point. And then we do have a bonus point for the leader halfway through the month. Basically, add up all your points. Most points wins. And we will say as well, for those who don't know, the guys from Run Queensland, Simon and Brett, they're putting forward two tickets this year to anyone who does all five rounds. Should we say five rounds, Kyle? Or should we say at least four? We're always changing the rules.
We'll see who it does. But anyway, if you do most of them, you go into the draw to potentially win a discretion by us. Yes.
We'll decide. And we'll determine what most is at a later date. But okay, so if you do most of the rounds, then see, the people who do all five, they're going to be livid at this.
Maybe they get a bonus entry. Maybe if you do all five, you get five entries. If you do four of them, you get four. We could do something like that too.
Western States Lottery.
One entry. Yeah.
You know what?
That could be something.
It's 8:55 on a Sunday night here. We're recording. That is a stroke of genius. Shall we do that? Western States Lottery style. Like you get more tickets in the more rounds you do.
Yeah, I like it.
Very good
idea.
We'll
come up with something more specific. But we'll do something like that for February.
I think the specifics are there. I think you've done it.
That done. Brilliant. We'll do it.
Trip to Europe, Kyle, and you've come back with that stroke of genius. So anyway. So Brett and Simon from Run Queensland, they're putting up a couple of tickets to Yandina, to one of the races up there. You can choose which one you want. So for anyone who does most of the races under our new lottery system of raffle drawing.
Any of the races. You might just do 6.8Ks in January and take the ticket. Like, this could be anything now.
We'll gauge the feedback that we get this week from that, the level of personal abuse that we get from people. Halfway point. Now, Kyle, before you went away, I did say to you something about Summer Goats, and you said there'll be at least one person who hasn't been involved in Summer Goats in the past who will make a bit of damage on Summer Goats, and you were right. Declan King-Smith.
Yes.
He's come out and absolutely killed it. So he's leading currently. He got the bonus point halfway through October. And Natalie Goodwin as well got the bonus point halfway through October as well. So they got the bonus point for this month. But at the moment, the top three this month, Declan King-Smith, 123, Brad Aird, 125. Here's a blast from the past. Matt Miller, 126, went out and did it this morning. So welcome back, Matt. I'm not sure if you're listening to the podcast or whether you know that you're in Summer Goats, but you are. You're in third place for this month, so well done. Natalie Goodwin, 134, has got a four-minute lead on Hayley Teal, 138.
And also, that's the course record, just to add that. She took Ingrid's course record. That's the fastest ever 4.0.
Is it? I didn't.
Yeah, 134. So
Shara Jones went out this morning, 151. She went out with Brad Aird for a course recce. So that could change. But yeah, we'll see.
There was also a couple of other course recces that were done over the weekend. They just did not follow the course. So they don't get a mention on the podcast this weekend. They will have to wait until they get it right.
We were very lenient in the early days, weren't we, about if Strava didn't register the loop, then send us a screenshot. And I think we still are lenient. You know, as you've just noticed with the raffle system, we're flexible with most things with Summer Goats. I'm not sure how long we'll keep that going for, Kyle. Whether at year five we say, you know what, time to pull your socks up and do the course properly.
Have to be on the segment.
But not for this year. This year we're still saying send us a screenshot if you missed the segment by a little bit. We're more than happy for that. So we'll see how that unplays in a fortnight. The next episode then we'll be able to look at Summer Goats 5.0 and 4.0, have a look at the leaderboard for where people are up to going into everyone's favorite loop, 3.0, Kyle. I think my favorite certainly of the loops. Bang for your buck. You miss out Heartbreak Hill. So I think it's easier than 4.0. And I think it's nicer. So Goat loop stuff, Kyle. 13,295 loops have been done when I refreshed this afternoon. Local legend, can't believe it, Scott George, 214. Female local legend, Vicky Sinclair, is 19. And, of course, let's talk about it. 1,000 has been done.
How good.
You were there.
What a day.
I can't believe you were there.
What a day. I know. I got back on the Wednesday night and happened to see the group chatting about things, and I don't think it had been made really obvious, but then I kind of looked at it and went, oh, I think that actually means Benny's going to be running it tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. I'm going to be here tomorrow afternoon. So I think I'd said to you, like, I might be there, just depending on how that was our first day back, whether I was feeling like I needed to be asleep or we got everything unpacked or where we're at, but managed to just get there in the nick of time. And yeah, it was good. I hadn't seen Benny for a while. So caught up with a few people that were there to go for the run, and that was exciting. It was good to see him. I think he was excited to be there. And I kind of said, like, when we were running, it was kind of like, I kind of was more interested in what's next as well. Like, does he do anything else? Like, I'm interested to see where he went for his next run, or where his first run not on the goat loop is. That's the bit that I'm more intrigued in, to see what he does next. But 1,000 loops, when we were running it, I was just starting to think about it. It's so far on this loop, nearly 7,000 kilometers, pretty much around 7,000 kilometers on this loop. That's wild. So especially how much they'd done recently. And we were chatting about, wouldn't it be cool to see, you know, how you see those things pop up on like Facebook or anything, and it's like the bar graph over time. It's like the leading thing. And then they catch up. It'd be cool to kind of, I said to Ben, I'm like, we just need to get all of your and Scotty's like individual loops with the dates on them. And you could probably map that out and do a little video of animation of how close Scotty got, how quickly he caught him, and then how quickly Benny kicked away towards the end. It'd be good to watch, because Benny obviously got a big head start on Scotty over the last decade, and then it's gotten pretty close. But he got there first. We know he wanted it. Scotty made him work hard for it too, and I think they both were pushing each other, and they were running a lot of kilometres in there each week, which was very impressive to watch. Every day I'd get up and just see multiple loops popping up left, right and centre. It was good to watch, but, incredible.
Now, what did you make of the song that Benny remixed, the Goat Loop song?
For those, I stand by it. I still stand by it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Benny, if you're listening, we'd love you to put it up on the Racing News podcast page. So Benny remixed a sort of a trance track of Kyle and I and things that we've said about the Goat Loop over the last couple of months. So he remixed it for us and put Kyle's voice over saying, but it's going to be close and he's only one injury away from it all falling apart. So it was good. It was well done. But Scotty didn't get anywhere near what we thought. We said at the time, didn't we, that was based on the projections when we were talking about that. And Ben obviously matched Scotty in the later dates and was even putting a few laps into him. So, look, Benny, for those of you who haven't listened to the episode that I did with Scotty and Ben, it's worth going back, having a listen to the Race to 1,000. You hear them talk in detail about the Goat Loop itself. We won't go into it too much more than that. But, congratulations, mate. And for Scotty, it's coming soon. It'll be 5 or 6 weeks away, maybe.
I ran past him this morning, Tom, opposite direction. I thought, this feels wrong. I'm going the wrong way. But ran past Scotty, I think, on his second loop this morning. And I did run past and I didn't say anything to him, but I was like, I wonder how many loops he's doing today. And I think he did 5 this morning. That didn't surprise me at all. Very impressive, but good to see him out on the loop.
Jack Gill's time. What do you got to say?
He slipped that one in very quietly. I saw that about a day later. I thought, okay. No title, no comment, just a little upload. I did say that once him or someone else, a few others, knocked me down a few pegs, that would motivate me to get back onto the goat loop. But I've been back on trails. I'm in Narang at the moment, so we'll see. We'll see.
So he's now 4.
He didn't message me about it. He didn't message me. We'll just leave that one there. Nothing's been said. I've spoken to him, just not about that goat loop. Nothing has been said.
He drove from northern New South Wales up to Narang, did the goat loop, drove back, and that no title, no nothing. So that puts him in 4th. So are you 5th or are you 6th? Where are you now?
I'm now behind. I'm behind Jack. So I must be. No, I feel like I'm 6th. Who else is in front of me? Maybe Daryl Hill's still in front of me. I don't know if Jack went ahead of Daryl. He might have.
So I think I'm 6th. Matt Courtney, Dave, Daryl,
David, Jack. Yeah, or Daryl. I can't remember who's first. It's Jack or Daryl.
6th, possibly 7th when Declan unleashes
Yeah, I'm in big trouble. I'm in trouble. I could be seventh in someone else probably come out of the woodwork. I could be close to getting kicked out of the top 10 before I know it, Tom. So
seven,
I need to keep training in there.
Seventh slips to 10th and 11th very quickly, my friend. It does happen very
incoming,
quickly.
Seventh place is incoming for me, I think. And so then I need to get out, pull my finger out and get out and run a time again.
Yeah. All right, mate, let's wrap this up. That's an hour 15. I mean, we did want to talk a lot about your race at the start, but what else have we got? Have we got anything else you want to mention quickly? Big's backyard is on right at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say that's on.
Have you said in the past, it's always happening when we're recording, so we'll cover that in the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of local Australians who are there. James Blanton from our North Club is over there smashing it at the moment. I haven't checked for the last 5 or 6 hours, so hopefully still all going well. But
I think
what else?
Still, when I checked before we started, the only thing I was going to mention, a few people may have seen it on Instagram, was the Courtney Atkinson organised through Red Bull the Race the Sun 300K relay that was on, started Friday morning at Surfers Paradise Beach. Kind of got a bit of a feeling of the old Endeavour relays, the old 500K relay that a lot of people who listen to this may have been a part of.
Those were the days, mate. Those were the days. That glory relay, days. The Endeavour 500, I did that twice. That was probably one of the greatest running events I've ever been involved
and
in.
But I saw this and I only heard, this was really kept on the download. Not many people knew this was on. I only heard about it the other day and then saw the Instagram page pop up. And there's probably a lot of people here that have no idea what I'm talking about, but it's called Race the Sun 300. And what it was, they organized Gold Coast Run Co, Pace Athletic from Sydney, and Hunter Athletics, I think they're Melbourne. Three teams of six, where it was going to be a relay run. You start at Surface and it's pretty much heading west up through the hinterland. So it was kind of through the roads up to Binnaburra, and then there was a trail section from Binnaburra to O'Reilly's, and then a trail section down what's called Duck Creek Road, not the other side, kind of towards Beaudesert. That direction, and it finished at Gerraween National Park at the Pyramid, which is a big granite slab. So it's 300 Ks from the beach to that rock, and it was pretty much a continuous relay where I'm not sure that there's no website or anything. This was just their little, they'd organize this as like a bit of a test race. I don't know if it's something they're going to do again and open it up to teams. I'm hoping they do. Because it looked amazing and it was kind of, you know, all the legs. I don't know if they got to pick when they swapped over or if you had to swap over at a checkpoint. Or you could do like, you could pick how far each runner ran. But really cool concept. So I think Gold Coast Run Co got there first in the end. But the goal was to get there in under 24 hours and beat the sunrise the next day. So you could get some photos at the finish kind of on sunrise. And it just looked amazing. I'm like, what a cool event. So I'm kind of hoping that gets opened up and turned into an actual race, or at least someone can turn on another Endeavour 500 style event, because I think there's a lot of people. I think when those races were big, like if you look at how many run clubs there are on the Gold Coast and Southeast Queensland now compared with when that race was on, you get like 2, 3, 4 times as many teams entering. Yep. So it would be amazing if someone, again, it's just the logistics of organizing it, but fingers crossed something like that really takes off in the next few years.
Yeah. Well, I did the Endeavour relay in 2013 and 2014, and I remember racing Ando. He was racing for Runners Connection, I think, was what he was running for in those days. And so it's amazing who, when you look back there, who's running back then and still running now. But you're right. And to be honest, when that Race the Sun came through, when I saw it, I did actually think in a managerial role for North, I think, oh, who would I pick as my six? Because six.
We were talking about this the other day, actually.
650-kilometer runners. I pretty quickly got to four, and then I'll be like, now I offend people. 5, 6, 7, and 8 is when I offend friends and runners and things like that.
I had to think about it. I reckon I could pick a pretty good
clear team. A clear six, or would there be some debate for sixth?
Oh, there might be some debate, but
that's right.
Yeah. We'll talk about that off camera, Tom.
Absolutely. Apart from that, there's been Bridge to Brisbane. There's been plenty of other things as well happening, but we are at an hour and close to 20 now. So thanks for staying with us. What else, Kyle? Anything else that you want to mention before we wrap up?
That was like a big wrap up of the last 6 weeks. I feel like it's been forever since we recorded one of these. So it's good to be back. Get back into a normal routine now. We're still well and truly on track to hit 100 by the end of the year, Tom. This is number 97. We're flying to 100. So
Well, those couple of ones that I loaded up.
I was about to say, lucky that you uploaded a few of them. We might be getting a bit closer, but we're well on track. So when does that mean if will we be around GC50 for the 100th? It might be just before that.
Pretty much.
It might be right around GC50 weekend.
Wouldn't it? That'd be perfect.
That timing. And I saw GC50 sold out again today.
Yep.
Again, yep. Are you in? 2 years in a row, it's already sold out.
25. Good. I like it. What else was I going to say? So this weekend coming up is the Cut, of course, in Narang, which is one of our local favourite races from Trail Trip, yep. Steve Jackson. So we are attempting this weekend to do a bit of a live feed for the last 4 hours. So from 1:30 to 5:30, we're going to try and live stream and test out a few production methods and try and get this up and running. So I think, Kyle, you're going to come after work and join me for a little bit of commentating.
There about, yeah, yes. About 2:30 onwards. I should be the last yep. 3 hours. I should be able to get there.
Yeah. So we're going to see how it goes. So either watch us on Facebook or YouTube Live or head down to Narang and watch it. It was last year. It was that hot lap at the end was outstanding. And this, yep. of course, is the fourth installment. The first year was 75 kilometres. Steve's done 50 for the last couple of years. And so this one should be hot and ready to go. So that's coming up in 5 or 6 days' time. So we'll look forward to that. But apart from that, Kyle, that's all she wrote. 120, one of our longest episodes.
Big episode.
Welcome back, mate. And we are eager that's to right. see what you do next. And the fact that you're giving us no answer for GC50 just spikes our interest to see what is on the horizon. Exciting things. Beautiful. We'll all see. Right, mate. Thanks, see you mate. At the Cut on the weekend. And everyone else, thanks again for listening. Jump out onto 4.0 in the next couple of days and then over to 3.0 for your lottery tickets for Summer Goats.
Sounds good.
All right. See thanks, soon. Buddy. See you later.
See ya.